Hey, welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast. The following was the live stream we just had after the Argentina game versus Egypt. You get my quick reactions of that match, but more importantly, the bulk of all of this conversation was surrounding the U.S. men's national team, their loss to Belgium, what is the analysis there, where do we go from here, etc., etc. An episode you shouldn't miss whatsoever. And mind you, if you're a coach and you want to learn how to coach even better and improve your coaching career, improve your players, improve your teams, and cut your trial and error cycle by years, frankly, you want to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. If you've been following 343 for any appreciable amount of time and know what we've accomplished and pioneered here in the United States of America, you should be jumping head over heels for the premium program. Right away, don't waste any more time. You'll reflect back years later if you don't and be like, man, why didn't I jump on the premium program when I first had the chance? So 343coaching.com is where you want to go. And parents, if you want to be better guides and mentors, soccer mentors to your kids, because God knows they need it, you need to go to 343masterclass.com. Finally, for coaches in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this live stream that we held. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Good morning. Gary is with us. Hopefully your heart's doing okay, Gary, after the Argentina game. Let's start right there. We might as well. The game just ended. We have to talk about VAR. We have to talk about the foul. Egypt's goal gets called back. I want to know your thoughts on the entire game, Gary.
I knew it was going to be difficult. You can be a testament to this. Everybody that I communicate with leading up to this match, I said I was very, very worried about Egypt. And most everybody, actually, I'm going to say everybody, said, come on, like, cakewalk. And I'm like, okay, we're going to see if it's a cakewalk. And I also said the same thing about Cabo Verde. When we last went live, you're like, nah, Messi's scoring a hat trick or something, right? And other people are thinking the same sort of stuff. And I don't blame you guys. I get it. But I'm like, guys, Cabo Verde is like a serious team, okay? No, they're not contenders. No, Egypt's not a contender. But these are good teams with great players that can do damage to you. And I'm already seeing what Argentina is. Argentina is on the decline, okay? So we have to understand that teams have cycles. Countries have cycles, and Argentina has not lost a competition since 2019. Since 2019, Argentina has not lost a single competition. So, guys, that's not going to go on forever. At some point, the champion is going to fall, okay? And then the cycle has to start all over again. It's going to have to start without Messi. So, you never know. Argentina might go on a Brazilian 20-year drought after this, like Argentina went on a 20-year drought before 2019. This is what happens. And Spain has been on a drought, and Germany has been on a super drought also ever since they won the World Cup. At some point, Argentina is going to fall. And when it went up 2-0, if you want my game reactions or something, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess this is it. But I was prepared mentally for them to, at some point, at some stage in this competition, to lose. So I was okay with it. When they got a goal back, well, first off, you wanted to talk about the VAR thing. I've said a million times since the beginning of VAR that it is bullshit. We got to get rid of VAR. And the reason that we got to get rid of VAR is numerous, okay? And let's not spend the whole episode on what all the reasons that it's bullshit, okay? But one of the reasons that it's bullshit is it's still subjective. You know, people want to say that, oh, it's by the letter of the law. It's black and white. It's like math, Gary. 2 + 2 = 4. We're finally going to get perfect justice in the game. Or they don't say perfect justice, but they say something like very close to perfect justice. Guys, it's subject to interpretation. And if you want to talk about the Egypt goal that got called back, if you want to look at the letter of the law or something, it was a foul. And so you got to call it back. But this is reality, Benny. This is just reality. And for those who say, oh, it's rigged for Argentina, this and that, good. I'm glad more Americans are starting to think about La Mano Negra. Remember we talked about La Mano Negra a long time ago in one of our episodes or a couple of our episodes. Mano Negra is what South Americans call corruption. It's called the dark hand, the hand that you don't see, the stuff behind the scenes, you know, by the bureaucrats, by the power brokers that kind of fix, I don't want to say fix games completely, but they kind of put their thumb on the scale when they want certain results to go certain ways. So good that our Americans are starting for the very first time, almost significantly consider, this is kind of strange. And they still haven't graduated to understand that this is not solely a FIFA thing. This is around the world, and the kings of corruption are here in the United States with MLS/US soccer. They just don't, Americans haven't graduated to that point yet. So the subjectivity of VAR, Benny, and the rigging. People want to say, oh, just give Argentina the trophy. It's for Messi. You're turning a blind eye to all the other things that have happened already in this World Cup too. Least of which is the Balogun thing. And prior to that is Croatia tied the goal against Portugal in the 99th minute or whatever it was, Benny. And no, apparently a sensor, right, from the freaking chip in the ball got a little blip or something, even though you've seen it a million times, I'm sure, the replay, Benny. Nobody touched the goddamn ball. Call it back. So the rigging thing. They wanted Portugal to go through, right? Because if that was Portugal tying the game and Cristiano Ronaldo was still alive, I don't know if that gets called back. So I don't know what else you want me to talk about, but yes, my adrenaline is still pumping, Ben. The GOAT is the GOAT. And we move forward. Hopefully it's Colombia next. Colombia, not Colombia, right? Colombia. And sincerely speaking, I've been on record with this as well. Colombia really is the team that most scares me and most scares Argentina. And for a whole host of reasons, but Colombia is top level. And if it's not Argentina, I want Colombia to win the whole thing.
Got it. Last thing on VAR, Gary, you were happy with it today, no? As an Argentinian, or were you kind of like, this is fucking rigged? Like if it was, like you said, after the Portugal-Croatia game, if it was the other way around, it wouldn't have happened. Same scenario here. It's the other way around. It doesn't happen. So are you happy?
Yeah. See, you see Scaloni on the sidelines, right? And Scaloni or Ancelotti or a lot of these managers are very stoic and they just kind of are neutral and just accept things as they come. And that's how I behaved also. I wasn't celebrating. I wasn't anything. I'm just like, okay, well, I guess thank God for that. You know, we are still in it. Yeah. That's all. I wasn't like, fuck that. That's bullshit. Thank the fucking soccer gods or the corruption or any of that sort of stuff. And I wasn't like, fuck yeah, like long live VAR. No.
All right, man. Let's get into what we're really here to talk about today, Gary. The US is out. No quarterfinal for them. There's so much to say, Gary. I have so many comments prepared. I know the people in the audience are going to bring their comments as well. We're going to try and get to everybody, guys. Let's start with even before the game, Gary. Because the last time that we recorded, it was before the Bosnia game. After the Bosnia game. Okay. And the red card still had not been reversed. And then literally, I think 24 hours after we published this, the news breaks that the red card gets reversed. So why don't we start there with the whole Balogun situation, red card, Trump, Infantino, corruption. Let's start there, Gary.
I mean, I don't know what you want me to remark on that. I just think it's definitely mano negra there. There is definitely corruption. That is not an on the field sort of foul that the referee reviews on the field. You know, it makes a determination on the field, whether it's a foul or not, whether it's a PK or not, whether it's a card or not. No, this was a decision made off the field by invisible committees, suits in back rooms. You don't know their names. You don't know their processes. You don't know their procedures. You don't know conflicts of interest. You know nothing. Somebody in some dark room came out and said, we've decided that we're going to suspend this thing and he gets to play the next game. And I know people make memes and stuff. Oh, what about Cristiano Ronaldo's red card? He was not supposed to play. But that happened, and those other instances happened outside of this competition. So do I think it's bullshit and corrupt? Yes, I do, that Cristiano Ronaldo got to play. But it's not the same circumstance where a player within the World Cup, a game just happened, you got a red card, you get to play the next game. That hasn't happened. And so it opens up a whole can of worms. Let's not go down this path because people have heard the conversation already from other sources. But it opens up a can of worms. Let's all contest yellow cards, double yellow cards, red cards, contest everything now.
And I want to bring up the point of a lot of people are blaming Pochettino, saying that like, oh, why would you even play Balogun? Like, it's so unfair. First of all, if you're the manager of the team and FIFA comes and says, hey, your player is available, your best nine is available, you're going to play him. It's a World Cup game. I mean, you're not going to have him sit there. And so for people to blame Pochettino and say like, oh, this guy's an imbecile, a cheater, why would he do, like, no. It's
are
not.
They really saying that, Benny? Some people are, really?
Yeah, a lot of people on X were saying Balogun should not start the game, or Balogun should not play at all. If Pochettino plays him, then he's a cheater.
No way, yeah, really?
You haven't seen that, dude.
Holy crap, man. That's
anyways,
crazy.
Right. I also think that, listen, it's impossible to know because we're on the outside. We're not in the locker room. But I feel like it had some effect on the mentality of the team. Like, their energy in the first 15, 20 minutes of the game, you could tell that they weren't the same team that we've seen all tournament. Now, obviously, the context is they're playing Belgium, a contender, a serious contender of the World Cup. But you didn't see the same energy. You didn't see the same pressing reactions. You didn't see passion. Like, the first guy to show any glimpse of passion on the field was Berhalter when he came in. Everybody else was kind of like timid. This is a phrase that's going out. They played like schoolboys. They were scared. So I don't know if this, again, it's impossible to know, this whole Balogun thing, if it had any effect on the mentality of the team. But it seems like something wasn't quite right with the group the minute the game started.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. Number one is there's a long history of situations where there's questionable off-the-field things that occur to teams, club teams or national teams. I'm talking about throughout history of football. And the very next game, that team doesn't win and doesn't perform. It does have an impact. I do believe that that sort of stuff does have an impact. And you hear the players say, no, it has no impact. We just kept, you know, training how we usually train. You're a human being. You know what's happening out there. You know the news. You know what people are saying. Of course it impacts you. This game at this level where the margins are so razor thin, and we've talked about this a million times, Benny, the mentality is a key differentiator in whether you succeed or fail. It's not just technique anymore. It's not just tactics or the tactical stuff. It's not just a physical thing. The mentality is so, so, so important. And we saw it right now with the Argentina game. How many teams at 2-0 with 10 minutes left? It's fucking over. You fold. Just about every team in the world, they fold. There's probably only maybe five teams in the whole world that wouldn't fold under the 2-0, 10 minutes to go. They keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. That's up here. That's not technique. That's not tactical. That's not physical. That's up here, man.
Yeah. And by the way, Belgium just did that, right? So that goes to show their mentality against Senegal, right? They were down 2-0, 10 minutes. They came back.
Correct. Big teams with big players execute or have the capability of executing. And we can talk about whether the U.S. has big players or don't have big players. Some people are saying, oh, the big players didn't show up. Well, look, that was my second point to your question, Benny, about the external factors having an influence. Yeah, I think the external factors had an influence. But the biggest influence is Belgium is in a different class altogether than the U.S. It's just a completely different category. They're not the same. And so when you see our players, Pulisic, okay, or you name, go down the whole fucking laundry list. They look like they don't want it. They look like they're not intense. They look like they can't get anything right. You know, that you lose 11 possessions in 45 minutes, I think is what Pulisic did or something like this. The opponent has something to do with that. When the opponent completely outclasses you, you are made to look like a schoolboy. Did Belgium not make us look like schoolboys in the friendlies that we had back in March? We look like little schoolboys. There was no controversy off the field. What was the excuse then? And the other thing we talked about, Ben, was this whole thing about, oh, that reminds me. Remember this whole stink, like the Guardian came out with the top 100 footballers in the world or something. Every year they come out with this list, and Pulisic wasn't on it. And the entire fan base and media here went apeshit. This is bullshit. Of course Pulisic is amongst the top 100 players in the world. And yours truly, we were the only ones saying, you're on drugs. He's not one of the top 100. And people are like, no, you're stupid, Gary. Don't you see all the goals he's scoring for Milan? He's a world-class winger, incredible, you know, way better than Rafa Leao, way better than this guy, this guy, this guy. And I'm like, okay, guys, I can't help you. All you do is you look at the box score. You look at, oh, look, Christian Pulisic scored again. Oh, look, Christian Pulisic got a double. You know, he scored twice. Wow. He plays for AC Milan. Wow. No, you guys, you don't see football. You don't see it yet.
Shocking performance. And we can get more into him later. I think you brought up Carly Lloyd. She said after the game, right? Oh, our big time players didn't step up. Carly, we don't have any big time players.
Zero.
Zero. You guys think like, oh yeah, Pulisic is the guy, or Balogun can, yes, Balogun is a difference maker. But again, they're trying to compare to the best players in the world. And we have zero of them, Gary. Like, what are we going to do against the first real team that we met up against? It was clear that we weren't at the level. Extremely clear.
Zero big time players, Benny. Zero. The Americans are just too new to this. They're too new. The fan base, the media, and I blame the media because the fan base consumes the media and they get their ideas from the media. They're new. Even if they've been in this game for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, the media, the reporter, the journalist, you're new. They are new to this football thing. They don't know. The people they surround themselves with are all noobs. The people they surround themselves with are all interested in the monopoly here and blah, blah, blah. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. But they're all in this bubble of ignorance. They don't understand. Well, Gary, he plays for AC Milan. We have Weston McKennie's a starter at Juventus. We have Anthony Robinson is a great outside back in the Premier League. We have Brendan Aaronson, who's in the Premier League. Guys, I wipe my ass. We in football heritages in Argentina, in Brazil, in Portugal, in England, in France, in Spain. When you cite these things that an American plays here, there, and we're like, so what? So what? We have countless players over the decades who played there, and a whole bunch of them have been trash. So now you finally have a few guys that are playing in these leagues, and you think they're spectacular. They're not spectacular. They're complete mids. So when they say our big players didn't show up, we don't have big players.
By the way, I know I brought up Anthony Robinson in the last episode. You've been on record for the past, I don't know, what, 3-4 years, Gary, of this guy's shocking technique, shocking decision-making. I feel like it's getting ignored because so many other things happen in the game. But if you just go back and watch his performance, shocking, bro. Every time he gets the ball, I don't want to say every time, but 80% of the time he gets the ball, it's a turnover. His delivery was terrible. Like I think the last three crosses of the game, the camera focuses on Balogun, like after the cross is like 20 yards in the air away from Balogun's, like every single time, bro, every time. And he has time, he has space, and he can't deliver a clean ball.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to talk about it, Gary, because guess what? He plays in the Premier League. So Gary, who are you to come out and say, oh no, Anthony Robinson sucks. He's one of the best left backs in the Premier League. You don't know what you're talking about, Gary. Okay. Well, it was clear last night. It was very clear.
Whoever says that, like, who are you to know whether I know what I'm talking about or not? Who are you? And look, just because it's a current event, it just happened 30 minutes ago with a cross, pinpoint cross. Lautaro Martinez is a 9. He's not even an outside back or a winger that goes up and serves crosses regularly and does that all the time, right? Lautaro Martinez, from 35 yards, way out on the right sideline, curls in a perfect pinpoint cross to Enzo Fernandez, and his only cross of the game at the end of the game. Look at the difference.
All right, Gary, you ready to have some fun here?
Yes, I do.
I can assure you, no player in the Premier League is trash.
Okay.
Brandon Hutchinson.
I defer to your ample, proven history of being an expert in the field, Brandon Hutchinson, 8491.
All right. Looking forward to your follow-up there. Let's talk about Tim Ream, Gary. Before the tournament, everybody was coming out and saying, why Tim Ream? Why is he the starting center back? Why should he be the starting center back? People were saying that he shouldn't have even been called up to the national team, okay? You came out and defended him, if you want to say that, to say that, yes, he is a good player. What did you think of his performance last night? Because if any of you are to open your X account, you're going to see the bashing of Tim Ream and Matt Friess all over your feed. So What were your thoughts on Tim Ream last night, Gary?
Well, let's rewind because people need the context. He's being called up to Pochettino's national team to be the center back. And then he gets called the captain, right, of this World Cup leading into the World Cup. And he's going to be the starter of the World Cup team. And people were trashing Ream and trashing Pochettino's decision. And since the very beginning, before that and during this, I defended Ream and said, no, this is correct. Okay. I also want to add that Ream is an MLS player now. He spent his entire career, for the most part, in Europe. Journeyman in Europe, never gave up, worked, went from club to club to club and grinded and tried to figure it out, you know, and had a good career in Europe. Came to MLS, already retired, right? Retiring. Just your final paycheck, you're sunsetting it. We don't have another center back that is at his level with respect to brains, okay, and technique to play out of the back. He's old, so definitely not fast. Definitely not strong. Nobody ever thought those were his strong suits ever. Okay. And nobody claimed those were his strong suits, but we needed a solid pillar in the back line with experience that could play out of the back and knows how to position himself. That was Tim Ream. He was the correct choice. People hated it. Then he played the first three games of the World Cup. Everybody who hated him said we were wrong, or at least, I don't know. I don't think they said we were wrong. I'm sorry, Gary, you were right. But everybody kind of flipped the narrative, right? Ream was solid, was good, okay? Bosnia-Herzegovina, good, solid. So everybody thought Ream was solid and good, and he was the right choice in every respect. And Pochettino made the right decision. But now you come up against the big boy, and the big boy is the big boy. Ream, I never claimed Ream was a big boy. I never claimed that with Ream or with any of these players, that we would go and make a deep run into the World Cup. So what was his performance like in this game against Belgium? I can't fault the guy, man. Yeah, in that one instance, Ben, the third goal where he was behind Matt Friis, where Friis had his howler, and Ream could have like cleared that, right? If you were better positioned from a body perspective. It's just, I can't blame the guy, you know? These sort of things happen. You look at Licha Martinez today in the Argentina game, on Egypt's second goal, he lost his runner. He was looking. But these are like split second decisions, man. And the Egyptian guy just made a beautiful run, timed run. When Licha stopped looking at him for a split second, he makes this little movement, just a tiny little movement. And the winger sees, okay, there he is. Boom, boom, goal. So if that would have been Tim Ream today with Argentina in Licha Martinez's position, people would be crucifying him. Oh, see, he doesn't, he's no good. He can't track his run or whatever. Guys, it's fucking hard. It's not easy, man. So that's my assessment of Ream. I'm proud of the guy. I think he did stupendously well. And I wish him well. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, just to clarify, he was the best, in your opinion, he was the best option at center back. For
absolutely.
In the entire player pool, everybody in the country, he was the best.
Let's move on, because this goes into the player pipeline, and the pool was already fucked, you know, due to 6 years of MLS and Berhalter. The pool was already fucked when Pochettino arrived. Pochettino had no choice. Pochettino did his best. He searched for options. He even dove into the cesspool that is MLS. Miles Robinson, just all these guys. Let's see. Is there anything else? There's nothing else. The pool has already been destroyed.
Yeah. All right, Gary, I don't want to spend too much time on the goalies, but I do want to bring two things up that you brought up in our last episodes. One, you said both of our goalies can't play with their feet. This is going to be a problem. And what happened? It was a problem. And the other thing that you said, I think right before the World Cup started, I'm going to find it today. You said, I'm curious to see if Matt Friis, listen, he's not going to shit his pants in the group stage. He'll be fine. But is he going to shit his pants when it comes time for a big knockout game and we're playing against a real opponent?
We need to collect all these receipts, man, and just show the people, dude. He shat his pants because I guarantee you, if you're not playing Belgium in a knockout game or Argentina or Spain or France or whatever, Matt Friis in that instance doesn't freeze. I think he would have been just fine. I just think when you're up against big boys and you're outclassed, you're not yourself, Ben.
Well, Gary, he's never played in a game that meant anything. This
true.
Is a big, game of his life, but where does he play his professional game? In MLS, in the playoffs. I mean, you're not seeing the same pressure that you're seeing here in the World Cup. Versus True. On the other side of the field, you have Courtois. He's played in World Cups. He's played in Champions League. He knows what pressure is. And yeah, on the ball, he's cool, calm, and collected. But then you look to our guys and it's like, what the fuck, man?
I do want to admit something somewhere where I was wrong. Okay. I actually thought the U.S. could have won or could have beaten Belgium before this game. You know, once you saw who the opponent was going to be or whatever. I actually thought that, yes, being at home, the team having the cultural shift that Pochettino brought, the players aren't, you know, big boys, aren't world beaters by any stretch, aren't world class by any stretch. But, you know, if you have unity, you're greater than some of your parts. I thought all of these positives going into it, like, you know what? I think it's possible. I think we can beat Belgium. I really thought that, Benny. I really did think I'm admitting something, right? I was wrong. It was clear from the very beginning, the first 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, dude, it's fucking over.
After the first goal or just once you pull?
Just only a few touches in. I'm like, it's over. There's no way.
All right, let's get into some more audience questions, Gary. Did the U.S. have an off day or is Belgium that much better?
Belgium is that much better.
By far, no?
It's like a Grand Canyon of a difference, man. It's like not even close.
Can Poch stay on and redevelop the youth system? We have talent, but no direction.
The only way you fix the youth system is with an open ecosystem at the professional level. You need promotion and relegation at the professional level in order to fix the youth system. In short, okay, guys, and please, if you're new here and you haven't heard any of this before, it's going to seem so foreign to you, but I encourage you, take your time, don't reject it. It's going to take you a long time to really see it, okay? When you have an open ecosystem at the professional level, you have a lot more professional teams. You have a lot more adult teams. Number one, all those professional teams and adult teams, whether in their first division, second division, third division, fifth division, they have an incentive, a market incentive, a real incentive to develop their youth for their first team so that they can not get relegated from the top division. Or if they do a really good job at developing the youth, they have a chance of having a really good first team and you might get promoted because you'll win your appropriate division. Even if you're in the fourth division, guys, or USL League One, which is the third division here in the States, you want to win so you can go to the second division and then maybe even the first division MLS at some point. So you have an outrageously potent incentive to develop your youth. And then what are they going to do? They're not going to put up a barrier, a pay-to-play barrier to develop their youth because that is going to filter out a huge swath of potential talent when you start charging people money. They're going to not charge the talented players any money in order for them to come over and play for your youth system so that you can develop them, so that you can have a good first team, so that you can get promoted or at least competitive at the top tier. The other incentive is if you develop youth, you as a lower division team, doesn't matter, you're going to be able to sell that player on to MLS, to USL, to Europe, to Mexico, wherever it is. So all the incentives are aligned for sporting excellence. And sporting excellence is in part developing the youth. When you don't have this, guys, oh, mind you, I'm going to keep going, Benny. All these clubs would then have an outrageous incentive to develop scouting departments, top tier scouting departments to find the youth. All of these clubs would also have an incentive to hire the best coaches, best youth coaches, best coaches, period. In every respect, technical, tactical, you name it. None of these clubs would have the incentive to hire shit coaches and do a shit job of developing. None of these clubs would be like, nah, we don't need a scouting department. Who cares? This is what an open ecosystem does, ladies and gentlemen. This is why the United States of America is the greatest world power on earth for a couple centuries. Why? Because we have the most open market on the planet, the least centralization of power. We don't have a socialist system. We don't have a communist system. We don't have a bureaucratic system. Yeah, I mean, we do, but not to the extent of the rest of the world. That is why we reign supreme in all other sorts of industries. But in soccer, guess what? We do the exact opposite. We give all power to one company, MLS. Close the system down. Now nobody has the incentive to develop players. That's why you see pay-to-play at the youth level. So no, full circle, Pochettino can't fix that. If you see anybody in the media or U.S. soccer MLS saying, oh, hey, we're going to give Pochettino all this power to help the youth, or, oh, we're hiring this new U.S. soccer technical sporting director, right? Now that Crocker's out, they have to hire somebody, right? It's all bullshit. The position's bullshit. Everything's bullshit. We hired this guy from La Masia to be the sporting director of U.S. soccer. He's going to change the youth, you know, give you guys all this curriculum. It's all bullshit. None of that will make any sort of difference. Do you think that will produce everything that I just laid out for you, that an open ecosystem lays out for you? That's the problem, guys. The worst thing you can do right now after this USMNT failure is go out there into social media, go to your circle of influencer friends and start blaming the youth and blaming pay to play. You are doing a harm to your own kids if you're a parent, because you're actually doing the monopoly a favor by not pointing at the problem, which is not having an open ecosystem. They are the problem. MLS is the problem. Central power is the problem. We have to break that up. So the more you talk about the youth this, the youth that, we should pay to play this, coaching sucks or whatever. Coaching sucks because it's a closed ecosystem.
Follow up to that. What will ever get it to change? Will U.S. soccer monopoly ever be eradicated?
Willie, I know you were going to correct him too, Benny. Willie, it's not U.S. soccer monopoly. U.S. soccer is not the problem. MLS is the problem. Major League Soccer is the monopoly. They are the problem. U.S. soccer is the federation. It is supposed to be the regulator of the ecosystem. It is in their charter to be the one to fix it. But the problem, Willie, is that it is corrupt. Because MLS controls U.S. soccer. U.S. soccer is now a puppet of MLS. MLS is the problem. You have to stop supporting MLS in every way, shape, or form. And not just stop supporting it. You have to actively engage in the conversation out here, okay, in the digital realm and in the personal realm. You have to actively engage in the conversation and tell everybody that MLS is the fucking problem. And every narrative that comes out of the media, who are MLS puppets, and they say MLS is great, we have to make it grow even more. You have to engage and combat that narrative. So what will ever get it to change? You guys, all of us, the public, will get it to change if we reach critical mass in education. You all have to be educated on this and be educated so well and so good so that you can understand it so well and so good at a fundamental level so that you're more effective at educating the next generation of, or the next people in your circle of influence. So you have to have this viral spread of education. Just be well aware that they're doing a viral spread of their quote unquote education to combat my narrative. It's not my narrative, but this narrative that I'm sharing with you guys. That is what will get it to change. You guys will get it to change.
So, but even if there was a mass education, right? Everybody who's educated, they know what the problem is. Yes, MLS is a problem. Okay, everybody's now educated. But then at that point, what's the next step?
Benny, if you don't support a product or a service, eventually that product or service breaks. Whoever owns that product or service has to change the way that they comport themselves or has to go out of business or sell their business to something else. So the owners of MLS will have to at some point come to a realization, hey, this isn't working. Let's exit. What does that mean? I don't know. Maybe they split. Maybe they do say, okay, MLS is no longer a single entity. All the teams, Seattle Sounders, Portland Timbers, Dallas, whatever, all the teams are their own thing now. MLS doesn't own all the teams anymore. You guys are all your own thing now. And U.S. soccer has to jump into the fray with so much pressure. They react to pressure, Benny. And we have to give the people at U.S. soccer the political capital, the support, so much support that they feel empowered to fight the monopoly. You see what I'm saying? So much support that Cindy Parlacone, corrupt as fuck. All these people are corrupt. But just to use her as an avatar for that position, okay? You have to give that person in that position, in those positions, so much strength and confidence that even if MLS tries to destroy their careers, that they will be fine. You understand? And so then US Soccer comes into the picture and does everything that they can to break the monopoly. How do you break the monopoly? In a legal way, because people, you'll get sued or whatever. No, you have an alternative here with USL. So if you're US Soccer, you go onto the ecosystem and say, hey, we are going to sanction an open pyramid, first, second, third division or whatever, under X, Y, and Z conditions. Who wants in? MLS will say, fuck you, US Soccer, we're not in. USL probably, right, will say, okay, we're in. And now you create an alternative pyramid and MLS will wither on the vine over the course of time. So there's all kinds of mechanisms. Another mechanism, Benny, if people are so educated and there's such a big groundswell that folks with a lot of power, wealth, and influence outside of soccer, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, politicians in Congress, the Senate, whoever, that sort of people who aren't part of MLS, they might come in and say, hey, we want to get involved in soccer. And MLS will be like, well, you can't get involved. I'm sorry. We don't have any more franchises or whatever. They'll be like, fuck you. You know, okay, we're going to go and start our own thing.
We need Mr. Beast to want to start his own club.
Yeah, no, but that's what I mean. Or even ex-pro athletes who maybe want to own a pro sports team or something. And they find out because of all this education, it's everywhere. Oh, shit, I can never actually have an MLS team and what's the point of having a USL team because I can ever go to the big league. So all those people who are super wealthy, LeBron James, you name it, they'll be like, well, fuck yeah, we're on board. We need an open pyramid, US Soccer. But the education has to come first. They're not even aware of this problem.
How about this, Gary? Jarhead Jr. says, an open ecosystem would be massive, but soccer is not woven into the fabric of USA like it is in other countries. Yes, there are demographics that are soccer first, but it's not all over the US.
Guess what? The reason you see that is because the system is closed. The reason you have that view is because the system is closed. So you don't see the fabric that already exists in microcosms. But I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. The issue is, okay, if we don't open it, you'll never see it. And if we open it, you will start to see soccer woven into the very fabric of USA. You know why non-soccer people got so engaged in this World Cup? You want to know why? Because there was something actually on the line. There's something actually to root for. There was hope, right? That you could do something. Those who say, oh, open ecosystems are shit. Look at Germany. Bayern Munich always wins. PSG always wins. In the Premier League, it's always the same four or five teams. In La Liga, it's always, you know, Madrid and Barca, boring, stupid, whatever. Okay. In the World Cup, it's always the same contenders. Why did the U.S. even care about the U.S. team? It's always the same contenders. Brazil, Argentina, France, Germany, you know. Why did the U.S. care so much? Hope. That's why. So when you have an open ecosystem, even if you're in the second division or third division or whatever, you have hope. Every season you have hope that maybe this year we'll come in one of the top three spots on the table and get promoted to USL Championship or get promoted to MLS. That's why it's not woven into our fabric, guys.
Here's another one from Cyber Shinobi. Are youth clubs in America associated with ECNL/MLS next incentivized to keep the economy system closed? Does the same apply to NCAA soccer and soccer agents geared at getting kids into college?
They are incentivized to keep it closed because when it's closed at the professional level, ECNL, MLS Next, the youth clubs there are forced into the business models that you currently see. And since they've had these business models for many, many, many years, they effectively have a monopoly in their own respective regions, right? Because let's say MLS Next graces you with the MLS Next patch to Club X, right? In Utah or whatever it is. Now, just because you have that badge, you're the most powerful, right? Quote unquote, not talent-wise, but you're the most powerful club in your area. You're never going out of business because you're always going to have kids in the area. And where do the kids want to go? They want to go to your club because you have the badge. Somebody graced you with the badge of MLS Next. And the people benefiting from that, the bureaucrats of that club or the owners of ECNL or something like that, it's a great thing for them. They don't have to compete to preserve their positions. So So yeah, they're incentivized to keep the economy closed. Absolutely. And the same thing with NCAA and same thing with all these entrenched institutions. Nobody wants change. Everybody wants a monopoly. And once you get a monopoly, you want to preserve the monopoly. Of course. That's why it has to come from the outside. This is another thing that folks unfortunately don't appreciate, seem to not appreciate. People say, have you heard this expression? Oh, if you want change, get involved. You know, get inside the belly of the beast. And change comes from the inside. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Once you're in the inside, all the incentives for your behavior and your comportment are to align with the interests of the establishment. You aren't making any sort of fucking change. And mind you, once you're on the inside, you start getting brainwashed because you're surrounded by that circle of people, that circle of bureaucrats, that circle of politicians, that circle of business people. So over the course of time, you become them. Change comes from the outside, guys. Outside stimulus makes you get out of bed in the morning. Outside stimulus makes you fucking dodge that bush over there because you heard a noise. That's how humans survived the jungle, right?
Jamie Liu says, I feel like the teams that win, like Argentina, are masters of the dark arts and are willing to put everything on the line to win. How much of that is a product of culture? And he also says, I could never see a U.S. defender doing what Suarez did in 2010 with the handball. Listen, hey, Matt Freese could have made the save outside the box with his hand, get a red card, but unfortunately, he's a Harvard man of integrity, and he won't be doing that. So there you go.
I 100% agree, Jamie, that the dark arts are in the toolkit of all the big boys, and they use the toolkit no matter what. You see the 5-second rule, right, where you have to throw it in or whatever. Okay, the players and the teams have adapted. What do? They don't go to the ball immediately because the count starts once you hold the ball. You don't go to the ball immediately. Or once you get to the ball, you change your mind. This other guy's going to take it. It's not me. Or you do something else. You talk shit to the ref. Somebody, your buddy over there will start talking shit to the ref and distract him while you make more time, right, to get to the ball. Yeah, all kinds of dark arts. Absolutely. Who knows right now, Argentina, Egypt? You saw there was all kinds of commotion on the sidelines with the Egypt technical staff. Guy got a yellow card, red card, all this stuff. Look, I don't think so because Scaloni's kind of even keeled. But you don't know if an Argentine player, or who knows, incited something there to get the Egyptian bench all riled up. And they got all riled up, and that killed 3, 4, 5 minutes of added time for Egypt. And yes, the referee added some more time beyond the whatever it was, 7 minutes or something like that. But it wasn't as much time as was wasted. And by the way, the follow-up here, you can never see a U.S. defender doing what Suarez did in 2010 with the handball. Right. You know why? Because players here in the United States with that culture, and there are many, 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 millions that have the Suarez culture in the United States who play soccer, they get filtered out. The monopoly here, the monolithic culture here, you need to be classy culture, right? This is a gentleman's game. You shouldn't have dark arts. That's cheating. Oh, you're being a thug or whatever. They filter you out. That's why you don't see those players get to the higher levels of the game.
And people like to think that, you know, some teams like France, I know you talked about this already, but oh, France is pristine and clean and the way that they play is fair. Bro, you have Mbappe telling the Paraguayan defender something about his mother's pussy. Like, you don't know the conversations that are going on. I guarantee you on every corner, they're, you know, saying something in their ear. Like, these teams are not playing clean, bro. The dark arts is part of the game. And until this country accepts that, we're always going to be mediocre, bro.
Yeah, or knowing how to win because you're emotional. So Mbappe, after the game, you saw the Paraguayan goalkeeper Paraguayan goalkeeper never did anything nasty or dirty or bad. Game ended, Paraguayan goalkeeper was next to Mbappe, extended his hand, wanted to congratulate Mbappe for winning the game. Mbappe laughs in his face, you know, and then completely ignores the guy. So that's not classy behavior. By the way, I have no problem with Mbappe having done that. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just trying to open your eyes. Like, you don't understand what's happening in football here. And it's all over the place. You saw French players also dive, Mbappe included, dive and roll around. Oh, he punched me here, did that. No, and you see the replay. There was no punch. And people wanting the Paraguayan to get a red card. You saw the slow motion one where kind of like the Paraguayan player was already on the ground and he kind of extended his leg a little bit, right? And with his studs, kind of got the French player in the leg, but it was the softest thing ever, right? It's like, it wasn't anything serious, okay, at all. And the people here in the States, the classy ones, the helicopter parents are like, they're so dirty, thuggish. That guy should have gone a red guard. They'll never get it, Benny. They'll never get it. They've been indoctrinated this way.
Here you go, Gary. You're always right. Everyone else is always wrong. Remember that.
I literally admitted that I was wrong earlier in the live stream. So I don't know if you caught that or not.
All right, Gary. So I know we spent a good chunk of time talking about what the actual problem is, but I know that you've seen this narrative getting thrown out on the mainstream. I know everybody has. Everyone says if our best athletes played soccer, we would dominate. Please discuss. Gary, everybody on X, all the people that just started. Dave Portnoy, I know we talked about him last time. He goes on a big rant of why do we have, you know, D-class athletes on the field? We should be getting LeBron James to play. We should be getting all these NFL guys to play. Then we can be real world contenders. Obviously, we know that this is not the problem. I mean, look at Argentina. Look at their player profiles. So why does this keep? It seems like every 4 years, Gary, this topic comes up and we're going to hear it probably again for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it justice. I'll do the best I can. There are four components that make up a player: the technical, the tactical, the physical, the psychological / mental. Okay. And now I'm going to list them in order of easiest to judge, easiest to identify, to hardest. The easiest thing to identify in a player is the physical component of those four components. It's the easiest thing to see. Is he big? Is he fast? Is he strong? Is he muscular? All those physical characteristics. Anybody off the street can do a decent job, or very good job, rather, I should say, of identifying who is a better quote-unquote athlete than whom. It's so easy. It's so easy. A complete dumb fuck can identify that. Next is the technical. Some people can see, oh, look, if you can, on your first touch, bring a 40-yard ball down out of the air and it's under control and it's right there on the ground, well, that's pretty good technique versus somebody who can't do that. Of course, technique goes a lot deeper than that, and there's tremendous nuance. Iniesta's technique versus Sebastian Berthalter's technique. If you don't know who those two players are at all, you don't know who they are. You have no clue who they are. And I bring them to a park here, and then I invite 100 random American people, even soccer people here in the States, and then we do a little technique drill or whatever, you probably won't be able to tell the difference between Berhalter and Andres Iniesta. And if you can tell the difference, you have no capacity to judge the gap between the two. You have no clue. So that's a lot more difficult than the physical. The tactical is next. That's very difficult to understand. What is proper decision-making? Why are players making certain decisions on and off the ball? What does the whole blob that is the team, right? What is that structure in real time as it's moving? What's happening there? That's more complicated, okay? Not many folks can see that stuff. And then the last one is the most difficult one, which is the psychological and the mental, because you can't see, that shit is hidden. You can't see a ball in your brain. You can't see it at all. So why does this come around every 4 years, Benny? The best athletes thing, because it's the easiest thing to identify. And how do you combat it? You can't combat it because these people have no capacity for judging the other three components. It's impossible to combat. The only way to maybe make even a sliver of a dent is what I've tried to do. I've tried to tell you guys or show you Argentina, the reigning champion, okay, has not lost a competition since 2019. They have lesser athletes than this U.S. men's national team. And over the course of history, Argentina has had lesser than athletes and physical components than the U.S. men's national team. Explain it to me. The same thing with Spain. The U.S. men's national team, historically and to this day, better on the whole athletes than the Spanish national team. And you try to show these people even pictures, right? I retweeted one just recently of Sergio Busquets. Sergio Busquets looks like a fucking skeleton, and he's slow. He's not mobile. He looks malnourished. He comes from Africa. Best D-mid probably in the history of the game. They won't get it, Benny.
And according to these guys' logic, why isn't Ghana winning the World Cup? Why isn't Senegal winning the World Cup? Why doesn't Congo win the World Cup? They have freak athletes, Gary. Probably even better athletes than we have in the U.S., but they're not making World Cup final runs. So what's the problem there?
They're spectacular athletes. And this whole best athletes thing is also starting to be exposed as stupid and a layman's view in America's own sports. The best players in basketball are foreigners. They're foreigners, and they aren't freak athletes. Baseball, best players, not American, not the best athletes. You can go down the laundry list of things. It's just ignorance, Benny. And that's why I'm saying education is the key. But in this particular thing, look, these folks are so far gone. These aren't the people that need to be salvaged. The people that need to be salvaged or helped are people who are actually in the game and have been in the game for 3, 5, 7, 10, 20, 30 years, who have been indoctrinated in nonsense. Those are the potentially salvageable people, not the commoner who comes every 4 years.
Yeah. Some people will never admit that they're wrong. Here's one though, Gary, who is admitting that he's wrong. Consul says, Gary, I have to apologize to you to clear my conscience. I thought you were a fool for talking about McKennie and Pulisic, but you were right about them. They disgrace the country to no ends.
I appreciate this quite a bit, except that last sentence. See, I'm on the side of the players. I don't think that they disgraced the country. I think they gave it their all, but they're just not good enough, guys. They're just not good enough. And that's what I've been saying since the beginning. When I said, if you want a particular type of team playing the possession-based control sort of game like Berhalter was advocating for when Berhalter was in charge and the media stood behind him, they were calling him like the American Guardiola, you know, and he wants to play possession. I went on record on X that you cannot have Weston McKennie be the guy. And people, for years, this was 6 years ago, for years, laughed in my face. Ah, ha, ha, look what a fool you are. He's on Juventus. He just scored on Barcelona. You don't get it. You don't see it. Or Pulisic is world class, Gary. You're just a hater. No, you don't. You just don't see it. And so, look, I'm always on the side of the players. I'm just calling it from a sporting perspective, okay? I like McKennie. I like Pulisic. I want them to succeed. I want to have great careers. I will cheer for them. But if you want to have a discussion about what this country needs, about what is a good player versus a great player versus an international caliber versus a world-class player, I'm going to tell you, it's nothing against the player. They did not disgrace the country, guys. Stop pointing the finger at the players. They did their best. And so did Pochettino.
There's another one. Gary, I didn't even realize Robinson's first touch was lacking that much until you pointed it out. And wow, big difference between him and someone like Marcelo or Jordi Alba.
Completely different. Yeah, universes apart, man. Completely different world.
All right. Jarhead Jr., serious question for Gary. It seems the game is becoming more of a counter-attacking game. Even teams with better possession look to win games in transition. What do you think about this?
I don't know. Look, to give a little bit of credence to this comment, I will say that the game has become a lot more physical and not like body, physical. No, I mean, yeah, those transition moments to be more lightning fast. I do agree with that. And so I think that there is a sense of a grain of truth to teams looking for those transition moments. See, the reason I hesitate is the fundamentals are still the fundamentals. And that is if you hold possession, if you can hold possession, you will, you should. And that is a higher probability chance as being the path to victory because you defend withholding the ball. Argentina could have gotten eliminated and we'd be having a different discussion, but Argentina does this almost better than anybody. And that is why they're successful because as I mentioned 7 minutes ago, they don't have the best athletes at all in any respect. Egypt is way more athletic than Argentina, way like completely different level. So was Cabo Verde. I mean, you want to talk about athleticism, Cabo Verde, look no further than that. So how does Argentina succeed? They hold the ball. They're master technicians. They're master mentally. They're masters tactically. That overcomes the physical. The problem, and then we can move on, Benny. The problem is when France wins this World Cup, people are going to say, see, they have the freak athletes. That's why they won. And then all of this stuff gets thrown out the window because they won't understand.
All right, Gary, let's keep going here. This one is in regards to all three of the host nations. Who had a better World Cup, Mexico, Canada, or USA?
Oh, that's a great question, man. Let me give you the virtues that I see in each one, and then maybe that'll help me give you an answer. I think Canada had a great World Cup. They showed very well. They did unprecedented things that had never been done before. Granted, they were at home except for that last elimination game. So a big thumbs up for them. I can't blame them for not going any further. I mean, look at, as Mourinho says, soccer heritage, right? Soccer heritage. Canada has no soccer heritage. Mexico showed incredibly well. But the reason I take points off of Mexico is because they played in the altitude. You can't breathe up there, guys, in Estadio Azteca. It's a disaster. It's so difficult. And so they're going to look 50% better than what they actually are. Their player pool is shockingly bad. Everything about Mexican football is shockingly bad. And so they look like world beaters. And this last game against England, they also looked remarkably good. Like, wow, like you're taking England on punch for punch and you're controlling big portions of the game. You have massive intensity. You know, when people say the US didn't have heart or intensity and all this sort of stuff, and you look at and they compare it to Mexico. Mexico played their little dicks off, right? Running around like crazy animals. Every single ball was contested. Yeah, but could you please take into consideration you're playing in the mountains up there. Oxygen levels are very low. And you're also a man up for 50 minutes. You're going to look so much better than the English who can't survive in that sort of environment. And yet, it still wasn't good enough. Another thing, remember I predicted, Benny, that if Mexico wasn't winning the game or something like that, how was it going to end the last 20, 30 minutes? It was going to end by them trying to, they don't have lightning fast combinations up the middle, I said, right? They're not going to break them down like that. They don't have great filtered through balls, you know, like Leandro Paredes can do or the Argentines can do or anything like that. So what are they going to have to resort to? Balls in the air, I said, crosses, cross, cross, cross. And then the English were going to eat that up every day of the week. It's exactly how it played out, Ben. So let me move on to the U.S. I think the U.S. had a good World Cup, man. They showed very well, you know, in the first three games, even the Turkey game that they lost. Turkey was a good opponent. You got tested. That was kind of a foreshadowing of Belgium, right? The Turkey game in many respects. I get it. People got excited and they thought the U.S. was something that they weren't. Myself included, I mind you, I kind of admitted that I thought they were a little bit more than this. So what's the answer to this question, Benny? Who had a better World Cup? I'm going to say not Mexico. Mexico is not in the conversation. It's either Canada or the USA. I don't hate Mexico. Stop. I don't hate Mexico. Just stop. I'm going to say Canada. And you want to know why too? Because Canada in that last game didn't have the benefit of playing quote unquote home like Mexico and didn't have the benefit of playing home like the USA. Remind me to bring up home field advantage at some point with the USA, Benny, please. Make a note. I don't want to forget. And Canada played Morocco, which is on the level, if not better than Belgium. And they took it to Morocco. Morocco is the one who had to resort to counterattacks and finishing the scarce opportunities that they had. I'm going to pick Canada. They had the best World Cup.
Got it. You should, by the way, I don't know if you checked the DMs, but last you gave like a breakdown of the Mexico-England game. And you're saying, guys, Mexicans were my best friends growing up. I don't hate Mexicans, right? But all of the DMs that you're getting, bro, is like, shut the fuck up about Mexico, Gary. You don't know what you're talking about. How dare you come out and say all this? So crazy, man.
Mexicans are a proud people, and they really don't like Argentinians. They've created this whole novella in their head about we have a rivalry with Argentina. Argentina has a rivalry with us. They have Argentina derangement syndrome is what Mexicans have. They want to be us. They want to be as good as us in football. That's what they see. They want to be us, Benny. But they can't. They can never be us. They just don't have the football. They don't have it. Look, they have great boxers. They're better than Argentines in boxing. They are. They're great in a whole bunch of other areas. They love their moms to death. You know what I'm saying? They're phenomenal family people. A lot of Mexican virtues, way better than Argentines. But in football, you just don't have it. you just don't have, you don't have it. I'm sorry.
Savage. Cesar Santos says, Gary, why do we see so many teams suffering against a deep block? Why don't we see more lock pickers on these top teams?
It's hard, man. It's hard. It's hard. This is a story as old as time. I remember it very clearly when I first started understanding the low block thing. I think I was maybe early teens, I'm going to say. And I would watch Argentine football, Boca, River, Vélez Sarsfield, Racing, Independiente. And there were teams, and in Copa Libertadores in particular, because when there's a huge imbalance in quality between teams, that's a perfectly acceptable strategy. One team bunkers like a mother effer, and they get really good at bunkering like a mother effer, and it's almost impossible to penetrate. So the point I'm trying to bring up from a historical perspective is that the answer isn't that there aren't lock pickers in modern football. That's not the answer. That's not the reason why. The reason is just it's fucking hard. And even when there were proverbial number 10s or lock pickers or Roman Riquelme or whatever back in the day, when you're up against a low block team, it's so hard to penetrate. When we would play pickup soccer, Benny, you weren't in these games because this was even before we had met, right? I don't even know if you were born yet. And we would have all our friends over to play pickup. Colombians, Peruvians, Mexicans, Bolivians. There a couple of, even like white boy Americans would show up once in a while. If my team was ever outclassed, because you pick teams, right? And you go to war, 4v4, 3v3, whatever it was. I would tell my team, organize my team. Okay, we're just fucking standing in front of the goal. Fuck you. We're just literally, the goals were shoes separated by 3 feet wide or 4 feet wide. We're just going to stand right here. You can pass it around, try to penetrate or whatever. They would get so fucking furious, the other team. And then we would pick our moments when we'd see it, where they fuck up. We'd go all out and pressure, get the ball and counterattack, and we score and we win the game. They're like, fucking anti-football, piece of, like, bad words galore, right? Hatred. So this is the problem. It's very difficult. And I don't, you need to revere this. Benny, one more. I know I talked for a long time, Benny, but there's just so much stuff in my head. This is another problem with MLS and enforcing parity with all the teams. Everybody's got to be kind of like equal strength. Anybody can win the championship on a given year. People here who don't know any better see that as a virtue. It also harms professional player development. It also harms professional coaching development in all regards, because when you don't have a huge imbalance in player quality and team quality, you never see this tactical diversity. You never in MLS see a team completely bunker down. Bunker. Oh, you want the ball? Oh, we'll give you 70% possession, whatever. We're just going to chill right here. Good luck trying to penetrate us and then pick their moments to counter and try to get something off a set piece. You never see that in MLS. So guess what? The players in MLS never get to experience what it's like to execute said strategy, what it's like to try to overcome said strategy. Never see it. And coaches never get to train said things, never get to train how to encounter said things. So the entire parity narrative is a disaster because it harms football. You need your PSG and your, I don't know what, who's at the bottom of the French table last season. You need your Bayern Munich and then the weakest team ever. You need that in football.
All right, Gary, I'm going to bring up your reminder. You wanted to talk about home field advantage for the U.S.
Oh, yeah. I think it's laughable. Does it help? Yeah, it helps. But does it help like it helps Mexico? No. Do you think that a team that's playing the U.S., Belgium, you think they feel any sort of fear or anything going to Seattle, Washington, playing in Lumen Field, right, with people cheering, fight and win, or I love you, USA? You think there's any sort of intimidation playing in Seattle? You think there's any sort of intimidation playing anywhere in the United States with the American fans? It's complete clown show. There's no hostile environment in the USA for soccer. And you know why? Again, because of the monopoly. Again, because it's a monoculture that controls who gets to be where and how much. They control people. They say, you can't be hostile. You can't say this, that, or the other thing in the stands. You can't behave this way or that way. No, because we have to be civilized. We have to be like the suburban wives of Orange County, you know, and everybody just chill. What, are you going to throw your fucking rainbow flags at the Belgians? What are you going to do? It is embarrassing. It is embarrassing. That culture is the problem. The MLS culture is the problem.
And they were all in the front row last night, man. There's clips going on X of a Belgian player going out for a throw-in or a corner, whatever it is. And the American fans are like taking a point in the pen. Or like, shit, like, let's go, you know? Versus, I don't know, if you're playing against fucking Chile, the Chile fans are going to be like, oh, go fuck yourself, McKennie.
Bad.
And again, I'm not advocating for the fans to go say, go kill yourself or something, right? But say at least something, bro. Like, come on, make them feel that they're outnumbered by thousands, bro. But now they're like, oh, wow, there's a Belgian player.
Can I get in the strap? Look, I'm on the big screen. I'm on the big screen, mom. I'm on the big screen. Bro, come on, man. Come on.
How do we end this, man? Where do we go from here? What needs to happen next, dude?
More education. I think we haven't done a good enough job. I have not done a good enough job, even remotely. Hopefully we can inspire more people to take up some of this work that needs to be done off our shoulders, because I can't do it alone. I know this very well. And it's going to take a village, man. It's going to take an army. It can't just be me. I'm drowned out by the monopoly who has media Muppets, who have distribution channels through the mainstream to brainwash people and say that once again, they're going to start talking about the future is bright. Once again, they're going to point at everything under the sun, Benny, that is not the monopoly. They're going to point at youth development. They're going to point at pay to play. They're going to point at Christian Pulisic. They're going to point at Matt Freese. They're going to point at the players of the U.S. men's national team. Some of them will take shots at the coach of the U.S. men's national team. Some might take a shot maybe at a U.S. soccer official, maybe, or like here, there, but all stuff that doesn't matter. And over the course of time, maybe 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, they'll start developing once more the narrative of the future is bright. They'll look at the U17 national team maybe beating Uruguay in a World Cup or something, or they'll point out a 17-year-old, Kevin Sullivan of the Philadelphia Union. Wow, look, he's so good. Or this Mehmeti kid, you know, in MLS, you know, the 17-year-old phenoms. The future is bright, guys. You know, we just have to give it more time. And the unsuspecting, silly fan base is just going to be like, oh, yeah, wow. Like, ooh, look, we got a 17-year-old in MLS. He's doing all this stuff. We have to combat it, Ben.
I don't know if you included this on your list, or maybe I misheard or not, but did you add Pochettino? Like, are they going to start pointing the finger at Pochettino as well?
Maybe he'll catch some strays. I just know how this machine works and the politics and the optics and how the media comport themselves. They went too far in praising Pochettino after the group stage and in praising Pochettino after Bosnia-Herzegovina. They went too far in the praise and they're kind of stuck now to a certain degree. They can't take out the bazooka and blow his head off. So they'll find a way that if they're good at anything, they're very nefarious and crafty, vile creatures that figure it out, you know, how to spit their venom. So I don't know. He'll catch something for sure.
All right, Gary, anything else we missed? A lot more to discuss in the future for sure. I mean,
no, well, look, failure gives us a better lens, a better magnifying glass than success, right? When you're successful, you think everything is great. Nothing changes. Failure is when you have an opportunity to identify the issues and a possibility of fixing the issues. So that's the silver lining here.
Right. I know before the tournament, you said many times you wanted the U.S. to make it to the quarterfinal because of the reasons that we've talked about many times on the show. But technically, because it's an expanded tournament, Gary, I mean, they did win a knockout round. So they kind of did land where you want them to land. This might actually work out in the long run for U.S. soccer. I mean, if they were to beat Belgium and then go on in advance to the quarterfinal, I think you'd probably hear less narratives now of, oh, this team sucks. It's, you know what I mean? So they kind of did land where you wanted them to, man.
Yeah, and I think God was on our side. He's always on the good side, I was going to say. He's always on the good side. I think I was wrong. had they beaten Belgium and gotten to technically the quarterfinals, we wouldn't have the opportunity of talking about the issues and or possibility of changing things. Imagine, Benny, imagine if we had beaten Belgium. I think the establishment would have been more entrenched. So I think the right thing happened.
I noticed, Gary, I mean, every analysis that you watch post-game from the mainstream media, what do they talk about? Tactics, formation, did Pochettino get the subs right? How was the mentality of the players? We spent the last hour and a half talking about the U.S. lost to Belgium. Not one mention of formation, tactics, substitutions. Not to say that that stuff doesn't matter, but it's not the main issue here. Not even close.
No bearing.
Nothing.
So, no bearing on anything whatsoever, man. Yeah.
You could literally watch 2 hours of Hercules Gomez and Alexi Lalas breaking down the game and you're going to get dumber.
Yeah. And they actually, like, when you say breaking down the game, I know, but for the audience, they actually don't know how to break down a game. They're just talking. Mm-hmm. And since the vast majority of their audience doesn't know football and doesn't know how to break down a game, and I don't care if you've been coaching 20 years here in the United States, there's a high probability you don't know football. So they get away with it. When I'm listening to these guys, I don't listen to them anymore. I've had enough. I listen to no English language broadcast. Makes you stupid. But when I come across their stuff, I'm like, you don't know football. Hercules Gomez, you played football your entire career as a pro. You don't know football.
Herc Gomez was already trying to blame Pochettino, saying he was tactically outclassed. Get the fuck out of here.
No, he's the worst. He's the worst. And rewind the tape to when we were talking about Argentina and Mexico and Mexicans hate Argentinians. That's why he says what he says. Hercules Gomez has a problem with Argentinians. He shits on Argentinians. Every opportunity he gets, that's what he does.
All right, Gary, for your sake, hopefully Colombia loses right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. That is the team, like, I want Argentina, obviously, but that is the team that we're all scared of, is Colombia. And look, see, we just know football, Benny. We just know football. Because if you look on paper, you look at the records, like Argentina is superior, Gary, to Colombia. They're always Colombia's daddy or whatever, for the most part, okay? But not always. You can look at Copa Americas. You can look at all the competitions, World Cup qualifying, whatever. No, guys. We know football. We see Colombia and what that team is, especially now. That team is devastating. And I remember it like it was yesterday when Colombia beat Argentina 5-0. I forget the year it was. Maybe you can look it up for me because I'm kind of curious now. With Faustino Asprilla and Freddy Rincon just absolutely obliterated us in Argentina, I think the game was, right, Benny, in Buenos Aires?
1993, World Cup.
Yeah, I remember, because back then, it was, if you wanted to watch these games, it was closed circuit TV. So you had to go to like a business or a restaurant more than anything, right? Go to a restaurant who buys the closed circuit broadcast, and then they charge whatever it was, $5, $10 a head at, you know, at the door. And the restaurant would just shut down, right for the game. And then they'd cram in 200-300 people, Colombians, Argentinians, everything under the sun, to watch on a big screen the match. I was there. I remember like it was yesterday. This Colombia team and this Argentina team in particular gives me those vibes where it could be a fucking devastating thing against Colombia. So, you know what's weird? I'm like, should I root for Switzerland or should I, you know what I mean? Like, if it's Switzerland, okay, it's not gonna be easy, but Argentina's in the final is what I'm thinking. Because on the other side, on the semifinal, it'll be like England. No pasa nada with the English.
Whoa, Gary, don't underestimate the English now.
No. Yeah. Look, I'm not underestimating them. I'm not.
Gary, what if England beats Argentina?
No, relax, everybody, relax. I'm not underestimating them. It's just not, they don't give me the fear, right, that Colombia gives me. Hmm. Or not the fear that Colombia gives me and not the fear that France gives me. You know, if I say, fuck, Argentina has to play Colombia, or fuck, Argentina has to play France, I'm shitting my pants for 24 hours leading into it. And during the game, I'm shitting my pants. But if I'm like, oh, we play England tomorrow or something like that, can you lose? Yeah, of course you can lose. Yeah, I have no fear. There's no sense of, oh shit.
All right, Gary, that's a good place to end it there.
Cool.
The audience, Gary, I think at one point we had like 130 people watching. So
nice.
Continuing to growing. Guys, keep liking, keep sharing. Subscribe if you haven't already. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Till next time.
Peace. Okay, well, peace. Yeah, should we do any more live streams? Obviously, the U.S. is out now, but should we do any more live streams before World Cup ends? Or audience, you guys let us know if you want us to keep doing these. And it doesn't have to be about World Cup. I mean, there's so many things that we can talk about.
I'm inclined to say, yeah, let's just keep doing the live streams after like World Cup matches. Sure. I think people are interested. And I have some fun. Do you have fun?
I do.
I know you just poke me and then just sit back and let me rant, but I don't know if that's fun for you.
Alex says, hell yeah. And TM says, do more live streams. So there you go. That's all we need. All right, everybody. Enjoy the game. Have a great day.
Viva Colombia. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football, while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.